RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
The Free Speech Union are launching a new campaign about the Law Commission's review of the Human Rights Act. A new website has been launched yesterday, and we thought we'd find out more from Jonathan Ayling, the Chief Executive of the Free Speech Union, who's back with us here at RCR this morning. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for coming back on.
Good morning, Paul. Pleasure.
Okay, so why the need for, well, this, what looks like a campaign, but also the launch of this website to facilitate submissions? Relating to the Law Commission, they've released a discussion paper considering changes to the Human Rights Act 1993 that will have major implications for questions, the Free Speech Union tell us from their website, for questions of sex and gender. Tell us about this.
So the Law Commission was commissioned by the previous Minister of Justice, Kerry Allen, to look at the state of protection for the transgender community, the intersex and non-binary individuals. And so they have set up a discussion document, the Law Commission, to ask 80 questions, really circulating around whether the Human Rights Act, as it is currently drafted, protects the transgender community and others from discrimination. That in and of itself wouldn't be a problem. There are some fantastic groups engaging in on that issue, and we would encourage them to take the lead, were it not for the unavoidably linguistic aspects of this, where really some of the questions that have been asked show that these are hate speech, or these could become hate speech laws by another name. And so the Law Commission is asking really incredible questions, I would suggest, around things like whether misgendering should be illegal, or whether it should be unlawful to what's called dead name someone. And these are somewhat obtuse terms in a way, but that's when, you know, an individual who was born Jack has transitioned and now identified as Jackie, and you still keep using the name Jack. Look, you know, people can make up their minds themselves whether there's a social need to do that, whether it's polite, whether it's consistent with the etiquette. But I don't think anyone can reasonably argue that in a free society, this is something the government should be compelling. And so we're concerned that that the government, and particularly National within the government, are not as strong on some of these fundamental questions of freedom as we would like. And it is possible, I would suggest, unfortunately, that with the way that they're acting at the moment, they could take with one hand and give with the other. And while they've said hate speech laws are off the table in one way, they could try and court the rainbow community through a law like this. Now, I've met with the Minister of Justice on this issue. He says, oh, look, we'll take the advice, we won't do anything with it. Even if that is the case, and I strongly hope it is, there's still a problem with a Law Commission report like this being drafted and advice being given, because a Law Commission is quite a significant institution there that exists to advise the government on the way law should be improved. And while this government may not pick it up, that report hangs around, and the next government or the one after that might go, well, look, actually, we were advised, or previous governments were advised that misgendering should have been made illegal. They didn't have the political courage to do it then, but we will do that now. I can very much imagine a future Green Party government, for example, looking to advocate for that. And so we need to make sure that there is as strong a pushback as possible, so that this report has to take into account there is a strong concern about the implications for freedom of speech in these proposals. And like with the hate speech laws, and like with last year's campaign for online speech, the Free Speech Union is very good at facilitating engagement. The two largest public policy consultations that have ever been conducted in New Zealand have both been facilitated by the FSU, with the first being the hate speech laws, and then the second being online regulation. I don't know whether we'll break our record again with this or not. I do think it's an issue a lot of people care about, and it's one that we need to really pay attention to.
Do you think there is any courting of the rainbow community going on? And if you think there is, why? It's not a huge community. And surely they're picking up now, as we do, that the sentiment in the community is growing against this. There's a huge degree of grumpiness developing now. It's a road to nowhere and a can of worms, I would have thought.
It seems to be a politically fraught space to step into, and I'm not even sure why they're asking the question around this, not least of all because of the question of the substance itself. And I agree with you. I think there's a considerable portion of the New Zealand population, and especially those who have voted for the government, that don't have time for this. So, but putting that to one side, even that being the case, the Human Rights Act already defends discrimination against transgender communities or the intersex or non-binary. In 1993, the word sex covered off other identities within that as well, like transsexuals there, that we now use the term transgender, but the courts have already decided that this is part of what the law was intended for. And so it seems that ultimately the best that they would occur would be simply elaborating on what is already the case. It doesn't really seem like there's very much harm being done that would stop being done once the Human Rights Act was changed to include gender. And it does seem like it's quite a political price to pay to not go anywhere.
Yeah, because if someone misgenders me, what am I going to do? Boo-hoo, fall off my chair, have a tantrum? I mean, no one's going to care, are they, about me?
Well, look, questions like outing, for example, Paul, these are considerations society takes into account. Previously, if a man was having an affair, for example, and someone went around town broadcasting that so-and-so down the road was having an affair, look, that would get you on the wrong side of that person next time you cross them on the street. Sure, but do we really think the law ever had a place in prohibiting someone from revealing to someone else their sexual escapades? Now, gender is slightly different. It's a question of personal identity. But I think some of those core principles apply. This is the whole Jordan Peterson approach. One of the reasons he has achieved the notoriety or infamy, some might say, that he has, was because in 2015 or 2016, the Canadian Parliament tried to mandate the use of preferred pronouns. And he said, as a professor, he said, "I use the preferred pronouns of my students, but you have absolutely no place in compelling me to do that." And I think a lot of Kiwis, if they came across someone on the street who was born a Sheila and now they think they're a man, and sure, we can play along a little bit, but that doesn't mean the government should threaten us with prison if we don't.
Do you think there's a level of activism moving into the entire legal sector now? We hear it in other matters with tikanga moving into some of the judgments in court, which is an amorphous thing, very hard to pin down, and that has affected some cases. But this sort of level of activism is really showing itself, do you think?
Look, I'll answer that in two ways, Paul. The first being the Free Speech Union has started to release a series of 8 what we call profession-specific memberships. And it's because of what you identify there. So, of course, the Gary Judd question of tikanga in the law community is one for the legal fraternity to consider. Some of your listeners might know of Janet Dixon, the real estate agent who didn't want to participate.
Better on. We know.
Yes. Yeah. So across... There are 8 institutions that the Free Speech Union has identified that are particular culture-creating levers. And so your legal community is one, your media is another, your public service. The question of the Law Commission, I would say, is more of how the public service is responding to it rather than the legal community. Of course, the Law Commission considers legislation, but they are public servants. And it's consistent with just over the past week, there have been 3 public agencies that have really started to continue that call for hate speech reform, even though the government has squarely ruled it out. The Law Commission has been told explicitly not to consider sections 61 or 131 of the Human Rights Act, which are where our hate speech laws currently exist. They said hate speech laws are off the table. But what the Law Commission is doing is effectively still pursuing hate speech laws. Just today, I've been discussing with other media outlets the police's training on hate speech, where they use an example. They have a picture of someone saying there are only 2 genders as the sort of protest that police should keep their eye on. These are concerning trends. Another was So this is training that police are required to do now online to identify hate speech and hate crimes. And I've been in touch with the police commissioner saying, "Commissioner, we deal with this quickly or we'll see you in court. This is illegal. We do not have hate crimes in New Zealand. Our hate speech laws are very limited. You do not tell your police officers that claiming there are two genders is the sort of speech that should invite police engagement." Another example was a picture that showed a banner of Kiwi, not Iwi. And Paul, you and I both know, not 20 years ago, this was a political slogan during the general election for the National Party.
I know the guy who thought of it, and I know the guy who designed the logo. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know Don Brash, who obviously made it famous at the Orewa speech, and he almost won the election on it. And so in less than 20 years, for that now to be the sort of speech that should invite police investigation, it's incredible. And the third is just yesterday. I don't know why, for some reason, John Campbell was invited to do Q&A for Jack Tame. Surely they could have found someone better to do it. But he had the chief censor on. And yes, in New Zealand, we do have an office of the chief censor. And they were both talking about how the current law is not wide enough to allow them to really be responding to the things that they should. Because at the moment, we don't, the Free Speech Union isn't overly concerned with the Office of the Chief Censor. They look at child pornography and terrorism and that sort of thing. But there's obviously an appetite to expand their remit. And I would say at the moment, the public service obviously appreciated that the previous government was pointing them in the direction of responding to this hateful speech from the uneducated, unwashed people that needed to be kept in line by the government. And now the government has decided that's not the path they want to pursue. And the public services has effectively said, bugger it, we'll do it anyway. And so that's why organisations like Independent Media and organisations like the Free Speech Union are so important to keep these institutions in line.
Would the term TERF be hate speech? I wonder.
Yeah, well, this is the Gordian knot that you would end up getting encapsulated within. One side can play this game just as easily as the other. And so it is very possible that the intention, and as we would see probably from the Law Commission's engagement on this at the moment, the intention would be to suppress gender-critical perspectives, claiming that the idea that there are only two genders and that gender is defined by sexual anatomy is antiquated and harmful. And society, of course, has grown beyond that. So maybe it would be to suppress gender critical. But then to call someone a TERF would be to probably disparage them on their political belief. And that could get the other side caught as well. So it's kind of a race to the bottom, unfortunately, where every side will be accusing the other side of misrepresenting them, of being hateful. I think let's just try and resort to reasoned argument and let the best argument win in the day.
Well, reasoned argument is around what is obviously male and female, and that's a pretty hard one to shift the dial on. How confident are you in government? Because I remember John Luxon.
Not very confident at all. I'll let you finish the question, but I just want to make that clear.
Okay. I remember Chris Luxon. I was going to call him John Luxon. That could be hate speech, misnaming him, saying that if anyone was thought that the issue of bathrooms and males occupying female bathrooms was an issue, you're on another planet. He said that before the election. Turned out he was completely dead wrong on that. And I haven't heard him say any mea culpa on that. But I wonder how confident we can be, first of all, in the bureaucracy, the institutions, the justice system, and our politicians when we're facing down what is obviously a binary situation, either you're male or female. Most people think that. Yet can we rely on the institutions of state to align with that? Or are we in some sort of weird, I don't know, cloud cuckoo land? It feels like we're heading towards that.
Unfortunately, Paul, I would suggest that over the past, we can take this back 100 years to the 1920s, but where the first generation of post-Karl Marx actors came along and kind of the ideas of cultural transformation rather than economic transformation came to the fore. But even leaving it at 30 or 40 years, the ideas of Judith Butler and Crenshaw as heirs of Michel Foucault and such. I would say that there has been a major shift in the ideological and principle and value bases of much of society, particularly the tertiary educated and the elite. And so there's a real disconnection now between everyday working people and those that assume these you know, the lanyard class, these culturally privileged ambassadors and commissars. And this is true certainly in New Zealand, but it's true across the Western world. I would say politicians ignore these cultural questions at their own peril. The term culture war has been used as a pejorative for quite some time. But I think there's actually quite a few people in our society and more broadly that say, no, actually, the fundamental questions of our culture and our belief structure and the values that we embrace truly do matter to me. I want the government to be considering questions far more beyond just what the economy is doing. And so I would say that actors, certainly Winston Peters in that regard, though David Seymour to a certain extent, are cognizant of that more than Christopher Luxon. But the longer it takes him to catch up, the harder it will be, I think, for him to have any sort of legitimate commentary in that regard.
Okay, so if people want to make submissions through your portal, how do they go about it, Jonathan? Just for our listeners to know, because they'll be in, I know.
Freespeechsubmission.nz. Freespeechsubmission.nz will take you to a microsite where you can identify, we've suggested some areas that are of particular concern. You can change those and edit the submission however you would like. You can even just completely disagree with us and use our own tool against the efforts of free speech. That's part of the dynamic. What we're doing, Paul, is suggesting some areas and then helping use some software and some AI to suggest some drafting so that every submission will be unique. And what this means is I've been in touch with the Law Commissioner responsible for this. And what she wanted us to do, she knew the Free Speech Union would be engaged on this issue. What she wanted us to do was have one submission and then have people sign their name to it. And we would have had, 15,000 people sign their name, but they still would have said that was one submission. What I would much rather do is force them to account for the fact that 15,000 Kiwis have submitted against this, calling out issues around free speech, and then they have to include that in the report. And so that already I would suggest that they are playing games. They note in the discussion document this. Our engagement on this won't be defined by the number of people that speak out. It'll be about those who engage with the strongest arguments. And there's some place for that. Of course, it's not just about noise. But it almost seemed like an out, and we'll see whether this is the case or not, around whether, even if there is strong engagement from the public, if they have the approved, right, good opinions, well, we'll take those ones into account. So I think the only solution that we can think of, the only alternative to continuing to see our free speech rights eroded like this, is to join together to speak up and to push the bastards back again. I mean, we're here again, and I'm sorry, I wish it weren't the case. I wish we could put this to bed once and for all. But the reality is we've pushed them back more than once before, and we can do it again if we all do our part.
Elon Musk says it's a mind virus. You think it is? It feels like some weird kind of invasion of the mind has taken place. Invasion of the mind snatchers, just to end on.
Paul, perhaps this is a conversation for another episode. I would suggest that, and this is an obtuse word to use, but epistemologically, in questions of the way we conceive truth and reality, we've abandoned some of the core principles and values that ground humanity and have grounded the West and made it the most peaceful, prosperous, and stable society humanity has ever known. And until we do that, until we return past the postmodern nonsense that has been sown through our universities, a mind virus of a self-inflicted kind. We've gone into this willingly and knowingly, wanting to throw off the constraints of reality and objectivity and, dare I say it, truth. And until we accept again that there is such a thing as truth, I don't think there's a way out of this.
Call me old-fashioned, Jonathan. All right. Nice to have you back on, and we'll follow that, and maybe we can keep up with the level of submissions and even what people are saying as you go through that process. And yeah, I'd like to come back and have that other conversation sometime. So
very good.
Jonathan Ayling, Chief Executive of Free Speech Union, thanks for coming back on RCR, Jonathan.
Appreciate it. No, we'll keep you up to date. It's open through till 5 September. So maybe we can touch base end of the month or something and do a plug for it.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.